Hey everybody, welcome to Creepy Club. My name's Rissa.
I'm Heidi.
And this is the podcast where we talk about spooky things and creepy things and true crime and Bigfoot and all of the above. Whatever you deem appropriately creepy, we like to talk about it.
Limbs, don't forget.
Oh yeah, that's one of our best episodes. Go back and listen to the limbs episode if you haven't. We talk about what happens to limbs after they leave your body. They exit it your situation.
Varies wildly.
This is kind of an unusual recording time, so
we're sleeping.
Yeah, it's 10:30 in the morning.
We're drinking coffee instead of gin.
I know, it's weird.
It is. We do have.
Oh no!
Oh no!
Rookie mistake.
Totally.
I should turn on mine to silent too. I didn't do that.
Oh, I should also tell my husband the dogs are in the yard. Not that he won't. We're leaving it out.
All of this in, by the way.
Oh, okay.
But I'll just let everybody know that this is an explicit podcast. Even though it's 10:30 in the morning, we're going to say cuss words because we're just thoughtful that way. And
I like that that's thoughtful. I don't know. We're so considerate.
Yeah.
The only problem with my granny glasses is that then when I look up at you, you're blurry. You look like a ghost. Ooh, you look like an apparition.
So do we have any creepy corrections, conclusions, clarifications from last episode?
What did we talk about?
The monster of Florence.
Oh, I don't think so.
Okay. Did you figured out what a scuba knife is?
Oh yeah. So my brother is I mentioned before that he does sport fishing, deep sea fishing, scuba diving. Like if it's in the ocean, he's into it. He lives in South Florida, so this is why. Spends a lot of, he and his wife and his daughter spend a lot of time in the Keys doing exciting things there. Mm-hmm. Living their charmed life. And he said that the scuba knife is for sea monsters. Because I said, is it for scary sharks? That was my I texted him and I said, what's a scuba knife for to stab scary sharks? And he said, it's for sea creatures, to open clam shells, which I guess.
To get pearls?
Well, I think maybe like after you're not in the water. Like, oh. It's just a handy tool. I don't think it's... And don't pearls come from oysters?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're not oceanologists either. And he also said, if you're diving, it could be to cut your partner's line. Mm-hmm. So I guess in case they need to go up quick.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's that whole oxygen business.
I don't really even remember talking about this last podcast, but it's also been a little bit, hasn't it?
It's been, well, no, there's just, we've just been super busy.
Yeah, it's like, been rough.
Crazy, crazy busy.
Yeah.
I feel like I've gotten 4 minutes of sleep since like last week.
I know. Same here. Well, we've got an extra special episode for you today. Heidi went out and did an interview with this man named Len Adams, who is kind of a local paranormal celebrity.
I know.
I would say.
So he is my friend Courtney, who I've known forever, like 10 years, her father-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And so a friend of mine, Elizabeth, owns a store called Philomena and Ruth in Waterloo, Illinois, which you should absolutely go visit.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have the most awesome, like, clothes and accessories, and just, it's the coolest store. Anyway, somebody came into the store, and they were looking for sage because they were staying in a local hotel, and they were certain that a ghost was bothering them.
Oh.
So I have to go back and look at the hotel name, so we might need to make a little field trip.
Sure.
Anyway, so there was a group chat going on about it, and I was like, oh my God, you got to get me in over there. I got to go talk to the people who own that hotel. And Courtney said, oh crap, I forgot. I got to introduce you to my father-in-law. You need to go talk to him. So she set up a group message on Facebook and introduced us. And I was fortunate enough to be able to go like meet him within a couple days. And he is just a true delight.
Mm-hmm.
He's an actor.
Yeah.
So he's very, he's a wonderful storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just a super great guy. He was just really fun to talk to.
So what makes him relevant to our podcast?
Well, so he is locally famous for doing walking ghost tours.
Mm-hmm.
And he's written several books on his experiences with ghost investigations and paranormal encounters. And so he will be talking about, throughout this podcast, we're going to cut in some my interview throughout the podcast, some of the experiences that he's had. He originally, soon after he got interested in it, he met Troy Taylor, I think that's mm-hmm. his name.
Yeah.
Who's like the big celebrity, big ghost celebrity in the Midwest,
mm-hmm.
and probably nationally, I would think. And they got to be friends. And so he sort of became his like apprentice.
Yeah.
And got really involved in it. And at one time was the vice president of the American Ghost Society or something like that,
mm-hmm.
which is now has morphed into the, what is it, the Mid-America?
Or I thought it was like Central Illinois or something like that.
Well, it's that Haunted Conference.
Oh, Haunted America Conference.
Yeah, the Haunted America Conference is put on by mm-hmm. Troy Taylor, which Len will be presenting at. He'll be one of the speakers there.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be missed, for sure.
For sure.
Absolutely, for sure. He's got several books that you can pick up. I went and met him at a place that he volunteers at called the Mermaid House,
mm-hmm.
which, like, what an awesome name.
Yeah.
And so he'll explain later why it's called the Mermaid House.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, according to him, it's also very haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a really fun interview. He starts off talking about, I asked him how he got interested in paranormal. And so this first story is his first encounters with ghosts.
All right, let's give it a listen.
I never thought any of this was real. And then I started having, when my daughter was born in 79, started having things happen at my father-in-law's farmhouse in Oakville, Illinois. And that's when I started reading more and more on the subject. And I came across the writings of Troy Taylor. And I really liked the way he wrote. I liked the way he investigated. And he wrote a book called Haunted St. Louis. And he talked about how violence often leaves an imprint behind. And to highlight the story, he talked about different gangs in the history of St. Louis. One of the gangs he talked about, the Hogan Gang, Irish gangsters, all my great-great uncles and my great-grandfather. So I had a connection there. And I said, I have to meet this guy. And I did. And we've been friends ever since.
Oh, so they were actually part of the Hogan Gang.
Yeah, they were the Hogan Gang. Edward Jelly Roll Hogan, his brother James, the two ringleaders, those great-great uncles of mine.
How totally fascinating. So I live near the hill. So mm-hmm. I know all about the Italian gangs. And there was also a Lebanese mafia at one time, which I had no idea. That was fascinating to me. I didn't know that there was any sort of immigrant population in that area.
Well, the Hogan Gang was fighting Egan's Rats. Those were the two Irish gangs who were fighting each
like
other.
EGAN.
Egan's Rats, they called them.
Interesting. I love that. And when I was a kid, there wasn't most of the old mafia guys had, you know, were too old to be too tough at mm-hmm. that point. But once in a while, someone's car would blow up.
or like there would be two.
The leisure bombing, yeah.
Yeah. So the leisures, I think, are not Italian. I think they're Lebanese or something like that. Yeah. They're not Italians. That's the family I was thinking of specifically. So I'll have to look it up and verify, but they are not, they're not Italian.
That's the one I remember, though, that
yeah,
bombing.
The leisure family. So once in a while, I think I was in elementary school when that happened. And then sometime in the last 15, 20 years, two old gangsters had it out on the hill, like had a shootout.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, what are these old guys doing? Like, they still, like, you've still got no sense and you're, you know, 100 years old now. Come yeah, on.
Let it go.
Yeah, it's time to let whatever beef you had about Provel cheese, let it go. It's available in other places now. Not many. They still have a pretty tight hold on the Provel. That's not a joke. The whole Provel business, but.
All right. Provel cheese is big business here.
The cheese of choice on pizza here. And if you're not from here, you'll probably hate it.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
We also briefly mentioned, I briefly mentioned the Leisure Gang, which I was half correct. They are a Syrian Lebanese. He was Syrian and Lebanese, and the head of that gang in the 80s, there's an article that I'm going to post that talks about how he was the head of the faction of the underworld in South St. Louis, and I think it was in 1980... there was a couple car bombings. Anyway, he ended up dead.
Oh.
Yeah. Pleasant. But I remember them.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's an episode.
Could be.
Could be.
Could be. Anyway, so that's, I think that wraps up our additions for that. So in this next clip, Len's going to tell us the actual experience that he had at his in-law's farmhouse that really sparked his interest in the paranormal.
So what was your first experience at the farmhouse that piqued your interest?
My daughter was born in April of 79, and this was before they had Highway 64 and all that running east and west like it is today. My father-in-law had remarried, moved out to this farmhouse in Oakville. So we would go out on a Saturday and end up spending Saturday night and come back Sunday afternoon. And I would help around the farmhouse whenever I could. And we would go that at night to the original Springs Hotel, half-fried chicken and beer at that time. I didn't find out about the hauntings at that hotel until much later.
So a brief aside about the Mineral Springs Hotel. I went to... He mentions the spring hotel that he would stay in there in Alton. It's called the Mineral Springs Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's sort of an antique mall. It's got like four or five businesses in it. And then the rest of it's sort of unfinished or, you know, in disrepair, the hotel part of it anyway. And back in the 20s, it was a happening joint. You know, Mineral Springs were kind of in vogue then.
Like a Russian bath.
It's kind of like, yeah, the healing properties of the mineral springs, you know, like that was the big draw for
this
place.
They still do that in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So, anyway, Brandon and Emma and I went on this, like, ghost investigation tour, and I can't really remember the name of the group that did it with us, but basically we stayed up pretty late. I think we got there at 10 and stayed there till, like, 3-ish in the morning. It was...
Oh, you didn't spend the night?
No, you can't. There's no, like, hotel rooms. It's all, dilapidated up there.
Oh, I think I would have just laid down somewhere. At 3 a.m., I'd be like, go ahead, move me. I dare you.
Very excited to see some ghosts. But while we didn't really experience anything there, it was really cool to kind of explore that space. It's pretty spooky. There's a... a dried pool down in the basement. They took all the water out, and so you can get down into the pool and we did a seance and a dark room session in there, and it's pretty spooky. People drown in the pool, so you know, there's lots of activity down there.
People have drowned.
Mm-hmm.
Not currently, since it
oh.
doesn't have water, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm slurring my words. It's 10:30 in the morning. Like,
oh, they drowned in the empty pool?
Yeah.
That's definitely an episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go out there and check that out. It's in Alton, Illinois, which is right across the river from St. Louis. It's kind of fun. All right, so let's listen to the rest of Len's story.
But at the farmhouse, when we would spend the night, things would happen. Doors would open and close on their own, footsteps, shadows moving around. One night, we came back after the chicken and beer, and we were talking, and we finally went to bed. My daughter would sleep in a little bassinet in the living room. My wife and I would sleep on a pull-out couch in the living room. Finding out much later, that's where they used to lay out the bodies during the funerals. You didn't go to the funeral home.
The real wake.
The real wake. You would have the body in the coffin in the house.
Yeah, they do it on the dining room table 24 hours, or whatever. Yeah.
Because they weren't embalmed most of the time, and you had to get them out of there. And so I'm in this special room. But we, one night, I guess I woke up after about an hour of being asleep and had to answer nature's call. So I went to the bathroom, which was off the kitchen. And as I'm standing there at the toilet, I get done. I'm washing my hands and I look in the mirror and there's this. He wasn't, I can only say Amish looking, because he had kind of the beard and the weird clothes and stuff.
Right, like the older looking clothing.
Yeah, he wasn't Amish, but that's kind of the image I had. Here's this man standing behind me, staring at me. So I turn around and I look, and there's nobody there. And I look back in the mirror, and he's behind me. So I look again, and nobody's there. So I look back forwards, and he's gone. So forget washing my hands. I just ran back into the living room, and I jumped into the couch there. And I bumped against my wife, and she just goes, "Not now." So it's funny and scary at the same time. Well, I encountered that man several other times.
Did you? And so house. What was your, did you get any particular, I'm always interested in sort of the vibe of those experiences. What kind of emotional experience was it? I mean, obviously you were surprised because you weren't expecting to see it. But did you have any, so if this is an energy and a presence, did it come with any particular, project any sort of feeling?
I didn't feel any emotions at that time, like coming from them. But I did feel, from the looks that we would get, because I encountered him and his wife later on, the looks I got were like, "What are you doing in our house?"
Oh, so maybe they didn't know that they had passed on.
I have no idea. They would be seen quite often. The summer kitchen, though dilapidated, was still out in the back. They would be seen at the summer kitchen quite often. And then I encountered the man at the top of the staircase. It was a two-story farmhouse. I was helping my father-in-law move some beds. Even though they didn't stay upstairs at all, because it was just my father-in-law and his wife, she had some relatives coming in, so they were putting some beds together in the upstairs bedrooms. So I'm helping him, and I'm putting a frame together, partially together, in the at the top of the stairs. And my father-in-law, I hear him come up the staircase, and I see his legs, and I'm talking to him as I'm working on the frame. I wonder why he's not responding, and I look up. It wasn't him. It was this farmer that I had seen the night before. And he's looking down at me, and I'm like, holy crap. There, I cleaned that one up. It's holy crap. And then I look down.
Oh, you don't have to. This is a not safe for work podcast. You can use all the bad words you want.
I look down, and here's my father-in-law coming up the stairs, and this guy is standing next to me. And then I look down at my father-in-law again and look up, and he's now gone. And so I'm like, I don't really know what's going on. A lot of times when these things happen, your eyes are seeing, but your brain's not comprehending. It's
like
this
in
can't
a mild
be happening.
State of shock, right?
I say it's like going to one of the strip clubs. You're sitting there and it's like, not that I go, but you go there and you sit there like, this isn't real. This is a bad B movie.
Well, so I think that there is probably like a very mild state of shock. So detectives call it the goofy loop. Like after you've been the victim of a crime or something, or you've had an accident, your brain just is not processing normally. You're just not doing rational linear thought like you normally would. You're kind of stuck in a goofy loop. And so sometimes people do really strange things in that state. And I would think that because it's so unexpected, that maybe it would activate a very mild kind of sense of shock where you're unable to process clearly. That's my hunch as a psychology student.
Yeah, instead of the word shock, I would use the word surprised. You're so surprised, it's like, wait a minute, did this just happen? Which might then lead into shock, depending on what the occurrence was. Sometimes it's so very dramatic that I would agree with the word shock.
Okay, so it's probably a spectrum of feeling.
I think so. Just depending on what happens and how it happens, I think would determine your level.
And so with the summer kitchen, is that where they would do canning and things?
Actually,
is that what that means?
My father, well, the summer kitchen is where you didn't have the, in the older farmhouses, you didn't have a kitchen in the house. Or you didn't cook in the house because you'd be heating up the house. And so in the summertime, the warmer weather.
Right.
So you had a separate, smaller building where they would do the cooking.
And then in the winter, you'd cook on your potbelly stove or
whatever. I would think, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, no, I mean, I've done real canning of vegetables. That is a sweat-inducing experience.
Well, my father-in-law, he had turned it into a bit of a workshop. So, you know, they didn't do any cooking or anything out there. There was no reason for them to do it. But it was in sad shape back then, but it's since been torn down. So,
did you know the history of the home? Were you able to find out the names of the people who lived there?
I was, actually, we had a couple of names. My father-in-law's, I do not know the name. This happened so long ago that I don't remember. I did write a story about it in one of my books, so if I have the name there. I just remember one name. There was supposed to be a young child that died in the house named Adam around that time. And it's the first time I played with a Ouija board, and it was the last time. And we were trying to make contact. And we did. Oh, I take that back. I get my time frame mixed up.
That's okay.
We heard about a young child. The name Adam came through, and we did the research and were able to match up a child who died in that home.
Oh, so when you did the experiment with the Ouija board, the name that popped up was Adam.
Yes.
And then you were able to later verify it through documents.
Yes. And it's weird because, things started to get really hot and crazy in there. So my Doris, instead of referring to her as my father-in-law's wife, Doris, she put a stop to everything. She got scared and actually threw the board out. And during the middle of the night, some of the kitchen cabinets were opening and closing on their own.
I think I would have just set it on fire.
Well, the next morning, the Ouija board was sitting in the middle of the kitchen table.
And that had not
That had been out in the trash can.
Ugh.
Supposedly, if we would have just broken the board or burned the board without closing the session, it would have left the door wide open.
So you had this experience with the man and the woman in the farmhouse that was a relative's house. It was your dad and stuff.
It was my father-in-law's wife. It was her family.
Oh, it was owned by the what'd you say, Doris?
Doris was her name.
It was Doris's family farm.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so that was sort of your introduction into the paranormal. And that sparked an interest and you started...
Well, it was...
What happened?
They moved out to Phoenix eventually.
Okay.
And they put the farmhouse up for sale. And there was a fan, a window fan, up on the second level that I said, hey, if you ever move, I want that fan. And my father-in-law said, we're moved. The key is in the mailbox. They're moving in tomorrow, so if you want it, go get it. It was a Friday evening. I went to Oakville after work, and I did the thing I make fun of everybody for doing. And you look at the old Hammer films, they always wait to go kill the vampire right when the sun's going down, never when the sun's up. So I was there in plenty of time, and I could have gotten the fan, but I stopped for a few adult beverages at the hotel, and I noticed it was starting to get close to sunset, so I went to the farmhouse, and I got the key, and I didn't have a flashlight or anything, but I thought, I have enough light. So I went on the back porch, into the kitchen, up the staircase to the second floor. I wanted to do this in a hurry because I didn't like being in the house anymore, but I didn't like being there by myself. So I ran up, I'm going to grab the fan. I run into the room, I grab, have the window up, I grab the fan, and about broke my arms because it was screwed into the
attached to the frame. Yeah.
All I had was a little Swiss Army knife. So I get that out, and I'm starting to take the screws out. It's getting darker and darker with the sun setting. There are no lights. The atmosphere just started, even though it was summertime, started to get a little chilly. And I'm thinking, oh, this isn't good. The screws, they had 3.5-inch screws in these things. I'm there forever.
Swiss Army screwdriver. That's quite a project.
Oh my God. And then I'm looking around the whole time while I'm doing this, and I did notice that the door that I had propped open is closed. I never heard the books that I propped the door open with. I never heard those move. I never heard the door. And I finally got the fan out, and I'm thinking to myself, this damn door better open up or I'm tearing it down. I turned, fortunately it opened up, and it was great. I ran all the way back down. I got out of the house, got to my car, and I'm thinking, I made it. Everything's safe.
Home
and then
free.
I hadn't locked up the house.
Shit.
So I had to go back through the back porch, and I just stepped inside into the kitchen, and I'm looking around going, okay, last time I'm leaving. I hear the toilet flush in the bathroom. The faucets in the kitchen started spewing water. And I'm thinking, oh, this isn't good. This isn't good. So I have to. I cannot just leave. I'm kind of responsible. So I go and the toilet flush, but there's nothing else that's good. Now, I went to turn off the faucet in the kitchen, and it turned off by itself. I thought, that's good enough for me. And I went out the kitchen door, and I locked the deadbolt. And it's a good thing I turned around slowly, because in the screened-in back porch, that's where they had the access to the cellar. Well, that access was just past the kitchen door. If I locked and turned around and just headed off blindly, I would have fallen, because those doors are now sitting open, which they should have been closed. So I looked at those, and I said, the heck with those, I'm not responsible for those. And I jumped over them, went out, and got in the car. And
can't be
off.
Anything that good in the cellar anyway.
If there was, I didn't want to see it. But that kind of really sparked my interest, and that's when I started reading Troy Taylor's stuff, and we met up, became good friends, and I've been seriously investigating for 23 years now.
Wow.
I've been a tour guide for him since up in Alton since 2004.
And so let's give a little plug for your business. So what
his business.
His business that you work for. So why don't you tell me about the tours in case someone wants to take one?
The Alton Hauntings Tours. If you go online, you can check. You'll see it's sponsored by Troy Taylor, created by Troy Taylor. There are imitations, but go for the real thing. But Troy, I had been helping him since 2000, 2001. I would go up and be a caboose the guy in the back, making sure we didn't lose anybody. In 2004, when Troy was leaving Alton to go back to Decatur, he asked if I would take over doing the tours, which I thought was quite an honor. And then he said, well, you might as well. You've been doing them from the back of the line for years, so you might as well move to the front. And so I've been doing those since 2004. Even with the physical difficulties I have, I'm supposed to be walking. You know, that's the best
right,
I can
do. Right, walking tour.
So I do walking tours. I've done bus tours and stuff. When I'm done, I'm a basket case, but I've loved every minute because I'm so high on adrenaline. I'm doing something that I love.
Yeah, and you are also an actor, so there's a theatrical element.
I am a bit more animated than the rest of the guides.
That probably makes you a heck of a lot more fun. So do you have, if somebody wanted to specifically come and go to a tour that you're hosting, do you have regular tours that you're responsible for?
Well, not now, because the season is technically over. This past Saturday was the last official tour. But until they put up a schedule, I wouldn't know what tours I'm going to do. But then you could, if you put a private tour together, you could request me or one of the
other
guys.
And if they looked at the website, they'll see who the tour guide is, right?
No, if you look at the website, and you would have a place that you could contact Troy about setting a tour up or whatever, and then you could request me or whoever you would want to lead the tour. The thing is, when the tour schedule goes out, there are no tour guide names on them.
Oh, so it's not listed.
No, it's
so
not.
So they would
listed.
Have to inquire directly
You'd have
with
to
him.
Ask me.
They have to ask you, is there a good way to contact you directly?
Yes.
Do you have an email address that you'd be comfortable having be public?
Yeah, I could just use my regular email address. It's
okay, so if
game.
Someone wants to know your schedule specifically because they enjoyed this podcast so much.
Right now, there's no schedule until next season, but I am working on putting together a website I hope to do over the winter.
Oh, great.
And so I would put more... I could say, hey, I'm doing this and this and this. That's what that's going to be for.
In the interim, though, they could email you at?
It's Joshie, Joshie, 1982, at hotmail.com.
In this next section, Len's going to start the tour of the Mermaid House and telling me some about the history and then about the entities he believes that live there.
So today I'm visiting with you in the Mermaid House. So I definitely have questions about this space because you said that this is an actively haunted space, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell me about who occupies this space?
Some of them we don't know. We know, like where we're sitting here in the middle of the big room, this doorway that I'm pointing back behind me, this is an area we encounter. There's a woman and two men, and we see them in turn-of-the-century clothing from the 1800s to 1900s, for you young people. But turn-of-the-century clothing, they have a connection, I believe, with the kitchen table, the back little kitchen area. That table is, in those chairs, they're so old. When we repair them, it's like trying to nail water to Jell-O. It's just, they're so bad. But there is a connection with that table, and we know they're not related, the two men and the woman. So we're not really sure.
You don't think that they knew each other?
I don't. The way they have been encountered, I think they know each other. I just don't think they're related.
So maybe that's where they played cards or something.
I do not know. The problem is the house, none of the furniture is original to the house.
Okay.
The house being built in 1830. So when you encounter entities and over, you have to try and determine, are they connected to the house or are they connected to a piece of furniture or an item of clothing that has been donated to the house?
Oh, I see. So... your understanding is that an entity could travel with an object.
I did not think that was true until I inherited a ghost.
Oh, okay.
He has since moved on, but he was very entertaining for a while.
Interesting. So what the Mermaid House, what was its original purpose?
This was built in 1830 by Captain Lyman Adams, no relation. He was a retired English sea captain, and after retiring, he made his way west, stopping in several areas before putting permanent roots down here. He did not live here. This was a glorified stagecoach stop. He owned the entire block, so some of the buildings that are here now weren't here, but he owned the entire block, so we know he had stables and things like that. And he lived a couple miles east of here in Summerfield. But he located the house, the hotel here, because old Highway 50 out in front of us, it was a major trade route. It was known as the old Vincennes Trail, from Vincennes, Indiana to St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, okay. And just for some context for the listeners, right now I'm in Lebanon, Illinois.
Well, people here, a lot of people know McKendree University.
Right, McKendree
which
University.
Which is the oldest college in the state of Illinois.
Oh, that I did not know.
It started in 1828. It's the oldest college in the state of Illinois. It also was the first co-ed college in the entire country.
That's very progressive for the middle of...
Well, it didn't mean you ladies could take the same classes as the boys, all of them, but at least you had a foot in the door.
You could intermingle,
yes.
Right? So, first
on a side note, go out and vote so we don't go backwards.
Thank you. Yes, please, for the love of God, go vote.
Go vote.
So this was a stagecoach stop. And what does that mean exactly? Is that like, so you come through with your stagecoach, you're not filling up your gas, so what are you doing when you're here?
You would, the horses could rest. If you're traveling on the coach, you could come in here and get a meal. You could spend the night. When I show you, when we have a bit of a walk around, you'll see the house was much smaller than it is now.
Oh, so it's had some additions.
It's had some additions. But this was a place you could get a hot meal, get out of the weather. People would come, they'd be traveling to St. Louis or heading east, but people also came to see the Looking Glass Prairie. Everything's Looking Glass this and that around here. Where's the Looking Glass Prairie? It's right across the street.
What does that mean?
Well, these prairies in central and southern Illinois, whatever white man discovered them, and I say this because they weren't giving credit to the Indians that had been here for, you know, many, many, many years.
Right. We have the Cahokia Mounds is not so far away.
The Cahokia Mound system is closer than you think. Out on the prairie, several miles out this way, I'm kind of pointing in a northeastern direction, is a place called the Emerald Mound. It's part of the Cahokia Mound system. It extends this far.
I read recently that it was such a developed civilization that there was tens of thousands of people who lived there. But I always try to make a point on social media to recognize Indigenous Peoples Day because it's, you know, there's the Thanksgiving lie for starters.
Yes.
And then there's the Columbus Day lie.
Yes.
That he was this great guy.
Even bigger lie.
Right. And so, and particularly because of where we are and our proximity to the Mississippi River, there were quite a few Native American tribes. And then we have Cahokia Mounds, which was a very advanced civilization of people, just this massive city that I think that a lot of it got destroyed because of the interstate, I know.
Well, I'll get ahead of myself, but the Lebanon Historical Society was founded in 1964, and their first purpose, their main purpose, was to go out and save the Emerald Mound. It was being destroyed, and it took them 7 years, but they ended up saving the mound, and now it's owned by the state of Illinois, but surrounded by private property. You can see
fantastic.
It from the road with binoculars, but you can't go up to it without special permission or you will be arrested.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think it is.
So the looking... Okay, let me back up. So the looking glass prairie, what does that mean?
Now the prairie, these prairies in central and southern Illinois, whatever white man discovered them, as they would gaze upon the prairie, whatever overcame them, that's how they would give a name to these prairies. Well, the looking glass prairie, it was said that when it was in bloom and all the grasses were up and the wind was not blowing, it was so still that the top of those grasses looked so smooth, it looked like the face of a mirror, the face of a looking glass. And that's how the prairie got its name, the Looking Glass Prairie.
I've seen some pretty beautiful sunsets out in the country. I can believe it for sure.
They are some, it's beautiful out there. And the prairie, many people would come to see the prairie. And that prairie is what led to our most famous visitor. In April of 1842, Charles Dickens came to Lebanon to see the prairie. He had come to America earlier in the year for a publicity tour.
I kind of forgot about him being... He was British, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that part.
Well, he still hadn't written half of his classics. So he came here on a publicity tour. And also, they had copyright laws in England. They did not have them in America. He was being robbed blind, him and many other British authors. So he came to get those laws changed. Call it karma, fate, whatever. Of course, they weren't changed when he was first here. The day the copyright laws were finally enacted was the day that he died.
Oh, geez.
Talk about karma.
That's harsh. So, okay. So people who are the entities that are present in this home, there are... In the doorway I'm looking at, there have been a woman and two men seen. Anyone else?
Down here, no.
So I would call this like a, I don't know, a living room?
This would be the main front room.
Or parlor?
The parlor might be considered the next room.
Okay.
But people would be here to they would have a meal, but they could also congregate.
A salon.
I don't know what screwed things up. I think it was 1936. The U.S. Geological Society or organization, whatever it's called, they came here and they would do surveys of historic places, and they did one of this, and they started putting a title on each room. Which screwed everything up, because that's not the way that it was.
This is just the first room when you enter the house.
Yes, this would be the main room.
So in this next clip, Len is going to tell us a funny story about how the mermaid house got its name.
Captain Adams was a retired English sea captain. While at sea, he honestly believed that he saw mermaids. Now back in those days, your 1800s, before... People would have fresh water on the ships, but it would only stay fresh for so long, or they'd only have it for so long. There was a lot of alcohol consumed while out at sea. I think eventually we all would have seen mermaids.
Probably.
But he was a firm believer that he saw mermaids, and that's how the house got its name. It's, yeah, I guess his homage to his life at sea.
So Len and I are well on our way on the tour of the house, which is the original house is two rooms downstairs, two rooms upstairs. And we've gone through the main room on the two main rooms on the first floor, and we're up on the second floor. And this is when Len starts to talk about what is his favorite room in the house.
This is my favorite room, because this was the most active.
Okay.
With things bumping around in the night. When I would do, I created the Haunted Lebanon tours. And when we would go through the house, everybody would leave and I'd walk back through the house and turn lights out. Well, I had footsteps following me and, you know, they always sound like hard-soled shoes on a hard wooden floor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wearing tennis shoes most of the time. These are not me making these sounds, because the cadence was different and that. And I got to where all the people on the tours, they can walk through with me. I'll turn the lights out.
So who do you normally see here, if you're going to see somebody?
Up here, in 1964, when the Historical Society bought the house, they bought it from the Campy family. Campy, very big name here in town. And in 1904, Frederick Campy, Fritz Campy, bought this house as a wedding present for his son Henry and daughter-in-law Emma. And it was the Campy family who had this then for the 60 years. But up in here, and we haven't had communications, we believe it's Henry Campy and his wife Emma.
How do you spell that last name?
C-A-M-P-E.
Okay.
But they are up here, and then also in the next room is Aunt Mary. Mary was one of Henry's sisters.
She must be 20 or more degrees colder in here than it is in the rest of the house.
It gets a little rough. I'm gonna probably turn the heat up just a tad.
Do you think that has, you always hear that the temperature changes where there are presences, there may be a presence. Do you think that there's truth to that, or do you think that's just an anomaly?
Most definitely.
Do you think it's the actual structure of the house that is the reason that this is so much colder? I mean, it is like much colder than downstairs.
There's no insulation in the house.
Okay,
that's
so this is
so
also
cold.
Partially structural.
This is all normal, right?
Okay.
Now. Although the cold spots that people talk about, this is all energy. We break this all down to energy. And if something wants to come together, manifest itself, we believe that you get the cold spots because they're pulling energy out of the air. They're pulling the heat out of the air because heat is energy, and that's why you get the cold spots.
Okay, so first law of physics, you can neither create nor destroy energy.
Right.
So the body goes.
It can only be displaced or become something else. It doesn't.
Right.
It can't go away.
So the body dies, but the energy that made it animated does not cease to exist.
You're the driver of the car. Car's going to quit working. You just get out.
That's
I want to know what happens afterwards.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's funny. Rissa and I talked, and she's like, for somebody who's so skeptical, you've had a lot of paranormal experiences in your lifetime. When I was a kid, I used to think I saw a ghost all the time. And I'm 45 now. Who knows? I mean, there's no way for me to know for sure, but I definitely saw something all the time, like probably weekly up until my teens. And I think, my mom was a big believer in those things. Did she plant a seed? Or is the veil thinner with kids because they're more open? Really hard to say.
We do think that children and animals, they see things the way they are. They haven't been taught as adults to put that wall
right
in front of
them.
They
didn't go to college and ruin it all.
Right.
Right.
The things that happen up here, they're more amusing than scary. But like the bed here that we have, it's a single bed here. I'll put the covers, lay them out, and then I turn around, and then I turn back, and they're moved.
Oh, like someone climbed in
the
bed?
Flip back over, things like that. A lot of footsteps up here. Now, you got to be careful. It is an older building. It will settle and move around.
That looks like a probably historically accurate log cabin quilt. Log cabin style quilt.
You want to take the pregnancy test?
Oh, I'm fairly certain I'm not pregnant, okay. But absolutely.
That's the rocking chair.
Okay.
Emma claims, takes credit for this, but three separate times during tours, that chair started rocking by itself. And the first two times it did it, there was, the ladies were pregnant. They look about 7 months pregnant. And so that was kind of a no-brainer. But I'm still wondering, why is that doing that? The third lady this happened to, she was in the prime, just not an ounce of fat on this woman. And the chair started rocking violently. And she's accusing me of doing it. And I'm picking out, I go, how the heck, there were other people. There was no way. She says, well, you're full of beans. I'm not pregnant. A week later, I got an email. Guess what? I'm pregnant.
Oh.
And I said, well, it wasn't me or the chair, so.
So maybe Aunt Mary.
No, lived. This would have been Emma, who was married to Henry. She is the one who takes credit for this.
Emma and Henry.
Emma
and
Henry.
Okay. And then Aunt Mary was in the room.
We'll talk about Mary in the next room.
Okay. Well, Emma, I appreciate your confirmation.
I'm surprised you didn't do that with me standing next to it.
Well, I am 45. The odds are fairly low, even with the, birth control. So.
Where you're standing, I was giving a tour, and there were three young ladies standing there. And as I'm telling the story, their eyes were getting bigger and bigger. And I'm thinking, I haven't got to the scary part yet. What's going on? They look, one of these books was slowly coming up off the shelf like that. And you see, this slopes down.
It does. That would be a feat.
And this was at night. Yes, the house isn't bolted to the ground. They didn't do that. It's sitting,
of course.
Still sitting on the original oaken beams. But there was no, it was at night. There was no truck traffic or anything. And I turn around and I have to pretend that I'm not afraid. And I wasn't afraid. It's like, oh, holy cow. So I just turn around, push it back, and I go, now you stay there. I'm trying to tell a story. And then I turn back as if it doesn't faze me. As a tour guide, if the tour guide panics, everybody's going to panic.
Yeah, you're going to have like mass hysteria.
So I have to hold it together during that. We've spent nights in here investigating, and we've had equipment come on and turn off in here. And
what was the name of that app you were using when I showed up?
Oh, that Ghost Radar. It doesn't work up here. It only works in that one spot downstairs.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I mean, and it sounds like, okay, there's just your location, or you're getting the words somehow from that. But down there, I've actually had them tell me things that I needed to know about the house.
Does it have a spirit box function or something?
Yeah, it's just a single word pops up. And it's supposed to sweep. I'm not sure what all the different dots are. Are those supposed to be entities or what? I don't really know. I just turned it on and it works here, and other places it hasn't worked.
So a brief aside about that Ghost Radar app that he was talking about. I've used it before. When you open it up, it has like a little circle that looks like your radar, where, you know, the little line goes around and it's green, and then for some reason these little like dots kind of appear, and they're different colors, like red, yellow, or green. He says the same thing. I don't know what those dots are for, if they're supposed to be presences or whatever. I have a hard time believing that a, you know, phone app can
that
see
there's
ghosts.
Like a half a dozen presences in every room that you're in.
Exactly. But one kind of funny experience I had with it, it was when I worked at Costco a long time ago selling cell phones, and I was in the cell phone kiosk and I was bored and I was looking at my phone playing with the Ghost Radar, and which I, you know, probably shouldn't have been doing, but anyway, it was so the other feature of this app is that words will pop up. I think Glenn kind of talks about that, but words will just kind of pop up, and that's supposedly the ghosts or whatever telling you something that you should know, or
like the spirit
something.
Box.
Yeah, just like a word, a random word. And so I'm looking at it, and it's like random words are showing up, and then all of a sudden it says Tim, the name Tim, and I was like, that's weird. And then not 2 minutes later, the T-Mobile rep walks up whose name is Tim.
Ew!
I know, it was so weird. I did not know he was coming. But, yeah, so that's my experience
with
the Ghost Radar app.
Costco is haunted, or you are.
Yeah.
Len did say that there's only one part of the house where the app works when he's telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was listening before I came. And there was a string of words. I ended up cutting it. But there was a string of words that came through over that period of time. And one of them indicated that he was waiting for a visitor.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. He said, I was sitting there waiting for you, kind of wondering when you'd show up. And then the ghost radar app says, eventually.
I feel like that's sort of like a magic eight ball response. But,
totally.
You know. But he's like, you know, I don't know, but it's fun.
So let's get back to Len telling us about the upstairs of the mermaid house.
My best communication up here has been with dowsing rods.
I'm
not bragging. I'm really good with dowsing rods.
Interesting.
I learned how to do
wooden or metal?
They're brass. But I was taught by one of the old guys that I worked with. For the electric utility, when I worked heavy underground, I could find energized cable using copper rods better than I could with any kind of equipment that they gave us.
Oh, interesting. I guess that makes sense because there's some sort of like...
There's energy coming off of
these. Energetic attraction. Yeah. Interesting. So, well...
And get a shot out the window... Because this is where we see Henry takes credit for this. This is where we see Henry all the time, looking out at us down there.
Looking out from?
Like down where my car is there.
Oh, so you'll just see him in the drive?
People have seen him on the tours. People, I've seen him, like I've left here like 11 o'clock at night. After a function or whatever, I get in the car, I call my wife, say I'm on my way home. And then you hear me go, oh, shit. Somebody's in the house.
What does he look like?
Middle-aged. You don't get exact. You see him, his outline here.
Like there's a shadow somebody. Figure?
No, it's not. There's a person here, but you can't really zoom in on his features. We also thought we saw one in this, but we've been able to recreate that.
Oh, okay. This so you disprove that one.
Yes. We're doing everything we can to show that whatever happened is something natural that we just have overlooked. That we've shot down. This we haven't.
So when people have looked out the window, they've seen him in the yard or in the gravel drive?
No, they see him up here looking out through the window at us down there.
Oh, so they're outside looking into the house. Okay, other way around.
When we talk about the ghost downstairs and the break-in, you'll get it. We used to come in through the back of the house. Now we come in through the front.
Okay, that makes sense.
So in this next section, we've gone through the entire upstairs, the whole two rooms, mm-hmm. and we've gone back downstairs into the kitchen, which is a really small.
Oh, and I sorry to interrupt. I like what he said about how they try to debunk. You know, a certain, like when he was talking about how a lot of people see Henry up in the window.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but then I didn't quite understand what he was talking about because it's like, you know, an audio medium, but he says some other phenomenon occurred and they quickly debunked it.
So what he was talking about is there's two windows on the same wall
mm-hmm.
facing out to the back
mm-hmm.
that are parallel to each other. So it's like two small windows that are exactly the same size facing the backyard.
Oh, okay.
And people have consistently seen someone in one of the windows.
Mm-hmm.
And they've not been able to explain that one. But something happened with the other window that they were able to explain.
Okay, like a reflection or something like that.
Yeah, like I don't know if it was a curtain moving or something. They're pretty small windows. They're like, I took a ton of pictures that I'll put in the meeting minutes, but they're pretty small, like maybe like 1 foot by 2 foot. They're mm-hmm. not very big windows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I just wanted to point out that I liked that he pointed that out.
He maintains a reasonable amount of skepticism himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, back to the kitchen.
Right. So the kitchen is a very small space. There's a table in the center, a couple chairs. They have recently acquired a cast iron pot belly stove. They're trying to restore the space to its original glory as much as possible. And there's a small water closet, bathroom.
They call them bathrooms here. Just kidding.
Maybe I'm from England. What do you know? So there's a small bathroom that's part of the kitchen space that would be under the stairs when you're coming from down from the second floor. But there's really not a whole heck of a lot in there other than the table, which is set. There's this really cool vintage teapot that I was like, I kind of want to stick that in my purse. And a couple things on the table, a couple chairs, and the potbelly stove. And that's really, and there's a new refrigerator that they obviously plan to replace with a period ice box.
Right.
Yeah.
So then there's something significant about the table in the room. And I think Len is going to tell us about that.
Yes. He thinks that when we were in the first room, which I don't know, we'll call it the parlor, he talked about seeing two men and a woman. And he believes that, and he's going to talk about how he thinks it's the same spirits in the kitchen and that they have a connection to that table.
All right, here we go.
Okay. This one is very active. The three people that we talked about earlier, the woman and the two men, I think there's a connection with this table. We've had, while doing tours, we've had these chairs shoot out from the table. But they don't fall over. They shoot out and then stop short.
Okay. Like somebody's pulled it out.
But it happens so fast. That's the thing. The way it happens so quickly and then stops so quickly. It's like, oh, did that just happen? But, and then also, this entire table, we've come in here when I haven't had the air conditioning on. This entire table is encompassed in a ring of freezing cold air from the ceiling down to the floor.
Interesting, like they've been sitting there all night.
Well, you could stick your arm in there and watch the hair stand up and the goosebumps pop up, that kind of stuff.
So this table has been the site of quite a bit of activity with the two women, or the woman and the two men, and you don't know their names.
No, not yet. One night we were doing an investigation, and I'm sitting down here by the light of one candle, and I have a video camera shooting down on me and the table. I have a tape recorder on the table. And I'm just playing solitaire by the candle, by the light of one candle. And when a question or something would pop in my head, I would just say it out loud. One of the questions I asked was, does it bother you, I got to get this right, does it bother you that I bring people through this house? And I didn't hear it at the time, and it didn't record on the tape recorder that was next to me, but it recorded on the video camera. There's a man's voice that answers, I don't know. That's the way he said it. I don't know. He's thinking about it.
He's contemplating.
So in this next section, we've moved to the room that's adjacent to the kitchen. It's part of the addition to the original house. And there are there's access to the cellar on the floor. It's one of those doors that pulls up.
Mm-hmm.
And Len tells a story about someone who comes to do work on the furnace.
Nothing ever happened in the cellar until 2 years ago. We were having a new furnace installed, and the young man that was doing the work, he was just about done. So I'm standing where you're standing at the top of the stairs. You good? He says, yeah, I'm almost done. All of a sudden he asked me, is this place haunted? And I said, well, I think so, but it depends who you ask. He goes, my GD tools keep moving around down here. He's upset. I'm excited because I never had any activity noted down there. And call it fate again, this young man's great uncle or great great uncle was Father William Bowdern, the head exorcist in the 1949 exorcism.
Oh, we
in
just
St.
did an
Louis.
Episode on that not long ago.
So he is,
yeah.
That was his great-great uncle. But in here, you see how we have the back doors all secured now?
Sure.
We had a break-in, Memorial Day weekend. They kicked the back door in. And now it's like Fort Knox. But before, the deadbolt was just in some plaster.
Yeah, good luck getting in now.
When they kicked it in, all this started, flew off. So there's dust all around us, and this was laying down. So I wait for the policeman to show up, and we walk in together, and we're standing right here. You see the footprint that kicked the door in. Same footprints. They walk in about 6 feet, spin around, and out the door they go.
Oh, so nothing was taken.
Nothing was taken. Nothing was destroyed. So I'm standing here with the policeman, and we're looking at everything, and the policeman said this. He goes, well, maybe your ghost scared him away.
Good for the ghost.
Well, I said, well, maybe they did. So 5 years later, I'm standing right here in the middle of this room. Five days later. I'm standing right here, and I'm just waiting for my brother to show up to wire a new electrical, big motion light in the back. I'm standing here, and I start talking out loud. Hey, I don't know if it's you that scared the intruder away, but if it was, I'm really glad that you did. I go, this is your house. I only take care of it for you. And just then, about where the table is in the kitchen, I hear this, bam! It's like somebody had a sledgehammer and hit the floor.
Like most, an affirmation?
Well, most people at this point would soil themselves and run out screaming.
Sure.
I turn, I smile, I go, I'll take that as a yes. You did take care of business.
So he's got a regular ghost security system there at the Mermaid House.
Yeah, it's like ADT and it's free.
I'm loving it. I kind of hope the same for my house. If any ghosts are listening, please protect me. So anyway, so what's this next clip going to be about?
So I just had like flashes of marketing ideas for ghost home security systems.
Nice. We're going to work on that. That'll be our new startup.
That's going to definitely. Let's hit the venture cafe. In this last section, we kind of wrap up. We return to the front room at the entrance of the house, and Len tells two stories. One is related to the ghost app, ghost radar app.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Ghost radar app. And then the second one, he says, we'll make a believer out of a skeptic.
Ooh.
Right?
Yeah, that's exciting. Let's listen.
You told me a story that I thought was really compelling. And was it using the ghost app?
The ghost app came afterwards. I gave a tour. There was several ladies. There was grandma, her daughter, her granddaughter, and her granddaughter had three little kids. They were very little. They were running all over the place. So I gave the tour to them, but the whole time my head's on a swivel, worried about these kids and what damage they might cause. They made it. They left. Nothing was hurt as far as I knew. So I sat down at the table where I'm at now, and I turned on the ghost radar for giggles and grins, and I had it in that doorway. I said out loud, I'm happy they're gone. I don't have to worry about those kids. I hope they didn't hurt anything. Just then, the ghost radar said, kitchen, I got to get it wrong, the sequence, but kitchen, table, cup, danger, plate, edge. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking, what the heck did those kids do? So I went right back to the kitchen area. Sure enough, a couple antique dishes were right on the edge of the table. One good bump and they would have been on the floor and been broken. Could it have been just coincidence? Yes, it could have. But I like to think that I was being warned that something was going wrong here and I could take care of it before it caused any damage.
Mm-hmm. And I was in all those rooms by myself at one point or another, taking photographs and those sorts of things. And I did not get any sort of uncomfortable feeling. I felt welcome and everything felt very normal.
I feel at home here.
Yeah, I did not feel like edgy, like, ooh, something might spook me.
Now, there was an episode, this wasn't that long ago. We had a meeting here at the house and I was getting, everybody was leaving, so I closed it all up and I was going out the back door. I went through the kitchen to turn the lights out, and as I turned to make my way into the other back room, somebody was staring at me from the base of the stairs, looking around the base of the stairs. I stopped and turned, and it was a female, and it was a head, and there was nothing else. that I saw.
Disembodied is not great. So I wouldn't like that.
I dropped the F-bomb, and I jumped about 5 feet. And then I stopped and said, wait a minute. This is what you're here for. This is what you're supposed to be investigating. Mm-hmm. And I turned around and went back, and I didn't see anybody or anything. I don't know if that was Mary because it was around the stairs or not, but you didn't get poked while you were in here? That's a big thing.
No.
Especially the ladies that are telling stories for haunted happenings, a ghost story thing that the theater does. We let them use the building here. They tell stories in the back, and there's usually a young lady in costume by the fireplace. It's been the last 3 years. When they're not telling stories and there's not another group coming in immediately, they walk outside the building because they were getting poked, like in the shoulder.
Interesting.
Like somebody was going, hey.
Were they in a specific location where it happened?
In front of the fireplace.
Okay, well, before I leave, I'm going to hang out by the fireplace for a minute and see if I get any pokes.
I did a tour this past Saturday up in Alton, and because it was so windy, I didn't smudge before we went into our last indoor location. And I'll be darned if, because I didn't smudge, I'm getting bumped, poked. I get that feeling like they stabbed a pin in my shoulder. I don't have
like
that trouble.
Like you were your own sort of...
I was the pin cushion.
Yeah.
But I didn't smudge, and I didn't have any of the crystals with me.
Interesting. What do you think, either with this house or anywhere else, do you have a story that you think is your most compelling evidence to the affirmative, to that would make a believer out of any skeptic?
Now, this story, this happened in front of about 30 people.
Okay, well,
so
that
there are a multitude of witnesses. This was up in Alton at the First Unitarian Church. And I had a large tour that night. I had about 60, 65 people. And at that time, we would go down. It was a special tour, so we went down into the original foundation of that church. So I won't go through the whole history of the church. We'll get right to the ghost stuff.
So the founder, you went to the basement.
Yeah, the original stone foundation. The first group I took down, the first half of the tour, they were all the chain smokers. So it was the last stop. So they could go through and then go outside and smoke away and go to their homes or wherever. The second group I took down, there was a young lady. She was about 20 years old. She was very worried about going downstairs. She had, now I get these wrong, but you'll get the gist of this. She had stage 1 epilepsy.
Okay.
And she had a device implanted in her chest that, I guess when an episode was coming on, this thing would come on and help her somehow.
It was a warning for her.
Well, we all go into the original foundation of the church, and as I start to tell the story, I look off to the side by the little three steps that we enter in into the area, and there's this young girl, and she's standing there sobbing uncontrollably. So I said, and now Julie, who was my helper, is going to finish the story over in this area, which is code to Julie, something's happened I need to address. You keep everybody occupied over here.
So the girl who had the epilepsy, she's upset and crying.
She's sobbing uncontrollably.
She's probably terrified.
Well, I went over to her. I asked, are you okay? She said, get me out of here. Please take me out of here. I found out later that she had gotten to the top step, and we were in the dirt floor area now, and that device she had not only came on, it surged. It never did that or is supposed to do that. And then went off, and it just terrified her. I said, it's okay. I will take you out of here. It's okay. That was one of us causing that. That wasn't a ghostly bump. But so I'm at the bottom of these three little steps. I put up my hand. She puts her hands in mine, and it was like we closed an electrical circuit. The pain shot through me so badly through my chest and stomach that I fell back and screamed and pulled her down on top of me. Not me, because we couldn't let go. Just then I'm getting this boom like a bass drum, but my head was the bass drum. But every time I was hit, I would hear voices or see images. All I can think is, I have to get her out of here. So I'm being hit, and I'm dragging her. And we had to go at least 50 feet to get out of this area, if not farther. We get outside the church. We collapse. She's crying, but she's better now. I don't have the pounding on my head. I'm not seeing the images. I'm just thinking, good, we got her out. I'm there for about 5 minutes with her when I realize, where the heck is her boyfriend? He's supposed to be here. Just then he comes walking out. And I said, you, stay here with her till I come back. Because I left all these people down in the basement area. Before I can go into the church, the doors fly open. There's my friend Julie screaming at everybody, get out now, keep going, keep going. When I left, it was only a couple minutes afterwards, I guess, people's cell phones quit working, watches stopped, flashlights didn't work. The only light they had was from my electric battery-operated lantern. It had 8 D-cell batteries that were brand new. Julie said, everybody's commenting, they can't take pictures, they can't, my watch isn't working, and all this. Just then that light started fading, and it was getting dimmer and dimmer in that area. And when the light goes out, you can't see your hand in front of your face. So Julie's up there with these people. They won't know how to get out. They're all panicking because their devices aren't working now. When that light started getting dimmer and dimmer, that's when Julie started screaming, get out now, because that's been a very active area, not in a good way for us. So I felt great that this happened to everybody, and then I felt even happier that I didn't have to go back in to drag them out with the experience that I had. But when I got home, I was drained. I was in bed for a day and a half. I was just completely drained by the episode.
So what do you think that was?
I have a whole long story on that, but I don't think we have time for it. But I do believe that there was in 1934 a minister there that was found hung in the doorway of the minister's study.
Yikes.
And the way I heard voices, they called it a suicide. I think he was hung.
Oh, so maybe it was a murder, not a suicide.
I think it might have been. These residual episodes, residual energy, they are imprints that are left in the atmosphere. They replay themselves over and over. You cannot change those. I don't believe you can change those, but
like
I believe
reenacting a
you
play.
Can be a part of it. You can be a part of it. If you're in that area, you can feel those emotions. You can feel what's going on. You can hear what's going on. Not always, but if you're in the right spot when that happens, it's like you're standing in the middle of a movie scene. It's all going on around you, and you're just there to watch it.
What were the images that were flashing in your head?
I saw shadows. I saw a room, and I saw men milling around, and I heard, we have to do it now. We're going to do it.
Ooh, that sort of supports the whole...
And then I saw one person that seemed to be much taller than everybody else, so I don't know if that was the minister as he was hung or what, but because by then I'm bursting through the doors going outside to help. My thoughts were to help this young lady.
Well, sure.
Because
she's having some kind of medical emergency, maybe. Well,
as tour guides, we'll be in areas that have been horrible to us, but our first priority is to take care of the people that are on the tour.
Of course.
So we've had people get sick and upset and, completely drained of energy, inappropriately touched, and not by me. I just want that stated for the record.
You're not the bum pincher?
No, I am not the bum. If I am, it's quite by accident. I don't want to get in trouble. But we've had people heard voices in that particular church. We have a man's voice recorded threatening to kill me.
Oh, I remember you mentioned that on the phone.
Yes.
Was that the incident where you were like, maybe I don't want to do this anymore?
Yeah, he was behind me and there were four dark figures around me. And then that voice was recorded when I went in the back room. And then that's when I got home. And there was a whole different story. Something was waiting for me when I got home.
Oh, my.
And that's when I ended up saying, I can't do this. And I took a 3-year break before I came back.
Did you write about that experience in any of your books?
I'm working on that one right now. I am working on a new book. If I get off my keister and get it done, I hope to have it out by the end of June, beginning of July 2019. And I'm going to write this story down. I'm going to write everything down. And it's going to be called Why Do I Get the Cold Spot?
And if you were if you were someone who wanted to purchase the books that you've already written, where would you find them?
The ones here in Lebanon, they're at the Legendary Creations. They're also at the Visitor Center, which is closed right now. If you want a copy, so I have a key. And also, they would be online. You go to Alton Hauntings Tours, type in Troy Taylor. He has an entire section on the site with books that various guys have written. And also, again, I am working on a website, and you should be, when that's done, you'd be able to buy them also.
So these are self-published. They're not available through any particular publisher.
Whitechapel Press.
Whitechapel Press.
But if you go on to Troy Taylor's website, you could buy them through him.
Okay.
He is Whitechapel Press.
And there would be some benefit to him as well, hopefully.
Yeah. And there, the one book I co-wrote called So There I Was, it's a joke title. We always say if we blank on a tour, all of a sudden we'll go, So There I Was. Me and Troy, backs against the wall, that kind of thing. And the other one about Lebanon is called Phantoms in the Looking Glass.
Ah.
Looking Glass because of the Prairie Phantoms is an homage to my dad, who was known as the Phantom, for good reasons.
For good reasons. Great.
I have a location coming up, and I'll have to talk to the owner. If things work out, maybe we could do a podcast/investigation.
That would be amazing. And my podcast partner, who is a huge believer, much more so than me, she would be like wet her pants,
well,
excited.
We do need a woman for bait in one of these areas, according to one of the stories.
Oh, so. I think she would gladly volunteer.
Okay, we'll see. I'll see
what
I can
so
come
I think
up
we,
with.
We could do a live podcast, but it's been an absolute pleasure, and I so appreciate your time today. I'm going to go ahead and wrap here and take a few more pictures and go see if I can get a poke by the fireplace. Get like a friendly one. All right. Well, thanks so much. So Len Adams and Alton Haunted Tours.
Alton Hauntings Tours.
Alton Hauntings Tours.
Yeah, there's a few knockoffs, so be careful.
Watch out for the knockoffs. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much.
So, did you get pinched?
I did not get pinched.
Oh, no.
I know. Oh, my gosh. Frogs in my throat today.
That's okay.
I wish you could have come with me. He was so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what a crazy story that last one was with the epilepsy thing. Like, I don't know
what that is exactly, but she must have had a monitor of some
right,
sort.
If we put on our skeptic hats, is that mm-hmm. even possible to have, like, I've actually never really even heard of this sort of device before, but
it's possible. Maybe it was something like a pacemaker or whatever, you know, maybe
right.
he got his gadget mixed up, but, or maybe it's exactly that, and I've just never heard of it before.
Right.
I think that, yes, it's possible for, if I have my skeptic hat on, it's possible for a device like that to experience some sort of interference that mm-hmm. would cause it to malfunction.
But
does
that
have to be
surge into another person, though?
Like, okay, that seems part I don't know.
Right.
That where you are creating a closed circuit.
Yeah.
That's like, I think, you know, they say if someone's getting electrocuted, you shouldn't touch them because then you're creating this closed circuit and then you're going to get electrocuted too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that devices like pacemakers and things that are internal would cause a shock
right.
to another person
because
if they touched them.
Right. That would hurt that person too, like the host.
Unless it was something that was not internal, it was maybe worn.
Yeah, maybe,
like an external battery pack kind of device. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I didn't ask. I can ask him. I can always email him and ask him or call him and ask him more.
Yeah, we could sort of look into it on our own.
Yeah, too. I know there's lots of different kinds of devices. Like if you're a type 1 diabetic, you have a pump that's external.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's battery operated. Mm-hmm. So I suppose it is possible to create some sort of shock from different kinds of medical devices. Sarah from Creepy Club, the book club, her husband had a heart transplant. And before he had the heart transplant, he wore some sort of external gadget that kept his heart regulated.
Yeah.
And that was like the size of a giant fanny pack.
Yeah, he like wore it on his shoulder like a purse almost.
Yeah, because it was so big. Mm-hmm. I was like, do you want me to make you a longer strap so you can wear it like a bandolier? And he's like, he's Mr. Chill. He would have whatever. Mm-hmm. But anyway, and he got exciting. He got his heart transplant and it was successful. And they also got to meet the donor family, which is amazing.
That is cool.
They had a really cool experience. Sidebar, please be an organ donor. Mm-hmm. And do more than just sign your driver's license. Go register on the organ donation website for your state or however it's done in your area.
And then listen to LIMS.
To LIMS. I'm telling you, if my arm had to be removed for some reason, it was no longer useful to me, but it was like healthy, it just couldn't be reattached, and that could benefit someone else, by all means,
right.
Let them have it.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. Anyway, so, but Lem was super fantastic. I really enjoyed it. It was such a perfect day to go for a spooky tour. It was like drizzly and gray. I got some really fantastic photographs. He was just warm and wonderful and inviting. And I love that we have this connection through Courtney and Josh and, you know, being a theater person, you know, he's a great storyteller. So it was a really enjoyable interview all around. The Mermaid House is a really interesting historical building. I would highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. If you're...
Oh, and he might try to set us up with our own personal investigation /
I know.
Podcast.
I did sort of like, oops, maybe commit Rissa's bait.
No, you were totally correct in that. I definitely want to be bait.
Well, he said, we need someone to be bait. And I was like, Rissa will totally do that. In head, I snickered because I was like, I would never be the bait. Screw that.
Hell yeah.
I'll come be the skeptic. Because he was saying that it's not, and I think we cut this from the audio because it was just in sort of a funny place, but he was saying being a skeptic isn't a bad thing and that they actually like to have a skeptic on site for their paranormal investigations, because it helps them eliminate some of that bias and mm-hmm. debunk certain things. So, equal respect both ways to the believer and the skeptic, just like us.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. So it was really, really fun. Lebanon's a really cute little town. The Mermaid mm-hmm. House is a really neat space. It's, I think, probably fairly limited hours. They do have a website. I'll put it in the meeting notes. If you're in, what would they be? Western Illinois? I don't know. If you're anywhere near the St. Louis metro area, it's a pretty short drive and I think worth it.
All right. I can't wait to go visit.
And we've got that. So the Haunted America conference.
Oh, yeah.
Tickets go on sale really, really soon. Mm-hmm. We were looking at that. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I went in 2017, and it was super fun. I actually saw Len speak, I think with his son, maybe?
Oh, Josh was there?
Maybe. It was him and a younger guy. Maybe it was just another younger guy. I thought they were related.
So.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. But anyway, I saw them talk. They told some stories. I saw Troy Taylor talk. He had a booth at there's like a vendor room, and then there's a lot of lectures. That's basically the gist of the conference. And then they also have after hours activities, which are like the ghost hunts and stuff like that. But Troy Taylor had this vendor booth in the vendor room, and it was two tables, you know, regular kind of like serving tables full of his books. He is a prolific author about ghosts and ghouls and things.
Well, this is going to be the 23rd annual Haunted America Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And Len is one of, it looks like, I don't know, about a dozen speakers. And let's see, tickets go on sale starting January 7th. The conference itself will be in Alton, Illinois from June 21st through the 22nd. And it looks like it's going to be a really super fun time. Whether you're a skeptic or a believer, I think that it's going to be a super, super entertaining, interesting.
And we're, both of us are really hoping to be there.
Yeah, I had planned to go this past year, and then I think I ended up having to work or something, and I was totally bummed I didn't get to go.
That would be the only reason I wouldn't be able to go, is if I had to work. But I will look at my schedule, and tickets go on sale the day before my birthday, so hint, hint, if anyone's looking for a birthday present for Rissa, this would be a great one.
Brandon.
Right. Or maybe, you know, maybe we could get a press pass or something. Like, I don't know if that's a thing, but...
I don't know. We're like,
we've got the connections now.
What have, so far we're trying to get Pickney Gin to send us a case of gin, some press passes to the Haunted America Conference. And we had something last time. We were like, how do we get people to send us free promo?
Right. I don't know.
I just want a case of gin. Yeah. That's all I really want. Yeah.
So before we wrap up, I just want to read another iTunes review. This one's from Thomas Jefferson.
Oh.
Yeah.
Blast from the past.
Yeah. This is perfect to find right before October. Interesting storytelling. Both hosts have unique and attention-grabbing voices. Their skeptic and believer dynamic is perfect. Great job, ladies. I look forward to many more episodes. Thank you, Thomas Jefferson.
Well, gosh darn, a president and a fan. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Woohoo.
I'm just so thrilled that it's more than like four of our friends that are listening.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, we do have some loyal friend listeners, but when the last time that I looked at the stats, there's like strangers mm-hmm. are listening. And it's just super exciting.
Yeah. So it's thanks really everyone exciting. For listening.
Thank you to absolutely everyone who takes time to listen.
And thank you, Brandon Lee Chilko, for our wonderful intro and outro music.
Which has gotten major props for my friend Dawn, who mm-hmm. wants to buy it. She's like, can I get that on iTunes, like the whole thing?
Yeah.
So we're going to have to get after him.
I'll see about putting it on SoundHound or something. Or not SoundHound. What's it called? SoundCloud? I don't know.
Whatever. I don't know.
One of those things.
I don't know stuff about things.
All right. So if you have any personal stories or topic suggestions, you can tweet us at Creepy Club Pod. You can email us at creepyclubpodcast@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/creepyclubpodcast. You can follow us on Instagram at Creepy Club Podcast. I'm at Creepy Club Rissa. Heidi is at Creepy Club Heidi. And if you want to look at these pictures of the Mermaid House and see some relevant links, and maybe we'll put up the Haunted America Conference website, you can go to creepyclubpodcast.com and look for the meeting minutes for this episode. We would also love it if you rate and review and subscribe to us on iTunes. We will read your review on the podcast if it's good.
Which is basically like being famous.
Yep, totally. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you join us next time. Meeting adjourned.